Welcome to the Something Something Experience Podcast, Episode 67. I'm Michael John Simpson. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/something2xp. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And if you sign up for the free trial at audibletrial.com/something2xp, it won't cost you anything extra, and they'll give us a little something in return. Help us out, won't you? This week's guest is an old friend of mine, professional actor Christopher Chen. Chris and I met working together at the first job I had in L.A. Chris has been acting for many years in plays and has had many guest roles on TV shows. Most recently, he'll be in an episode of Modern Family on ABC, airing Wednesday, March 23rd. Kitty and I talked to Chris about acting, creative arts, the entertainment industry, representation, being Asian, and nail polish. Screw you guys, I'm going home. Here's episode 67 of the Something Something Experience.
Very noisy here today. Check, check. All right.
Chris, what do you do?
I'm an actor.
Oh, okay.
Like an actual, honest to God, working actor.
An actor who actually gets paid to act.
You used to be a pro we've known each other for 18 years.
Yeah.
Can you believe that shit? What were you doing at US Interactive, at Digital Evolution?
Yeah, I was in the tech department. People never believed I was because I had all the fun stuff on my desk.
Oh, yeah.
They go, we always thought you were art department. And they
thought, yeah.
And we thought, they go, oh, we thought you, because I talk so much,
mm-hmm.
they thought I was project manager.
Right.
No, I was a coder.
Right.
But my desk did look different than other people's in the tech department.
We were obsessed with Eric Cartman. We all were obsessed with South Park. It was 1998, so we were all obsessed with South Park.
South Park. I even dressed like him.
I still have a picture of you from Halloween when I was Dr. Evil with Trevor, or, you know, now Taylor, but Trevor as my mini-me, and you as Eric Cartman, and you had the eyeglasses thing, and the big hat, and, you know,
I made it.
See you guys. You know, it was pretty cool.
I love South Park. Yeah, I had my little tchotchkes. Almost every other cubicle with the tech department, just Spartan, just tech books, and that's it. But I have tchotchkes, and some people sought me out, like one of the project managers. Like, you're different.
Yeah. Well, you and I bonded immediately. I mean, you and I were always... And I know you were interested in doing acting back then, and you had a couple little things that you were doing here and there. Weren't you in an improv group or something at that point, too?
No, not an improv. I didn't do improv until recently, and it was really valuable stuff. But I was doing... I did do a really cool film, a short film, and I did do... I was auditioning for plays and musicals, because that's what I came from, but I didn't do any because it didn't work with... That was my first, like, daytime job. In fact, I had to turn down a job that I'm like... I'm now fighting to get back into that theater company. You turned us down. It's like, well, you had rehearsals during the day, and I took my first day job. So yeah, but during that time when we were working, I got kind of burnt out on both acting and real life.
Mm-hmm.
So then after that, I got offered, once our company kind of disbanded.
I got fired, and then the company
got
dissolved.
Well,
yeah.
I didn't know.
I think that, like, burnout is something that, like, creatives don't really talk about and we don't really take notice of. Like, because it's something that we enjoy doing, a lot of people just assume, like, oh, you do it forever. But it is important to, like, take that time to, like, take a break and recharge. Or at least I find that, you know, with myself and my art and talking to other people, like, it's the same thing. Like, we're expected to always, like, create, and it's like, no, sometimes I need to step back and, like, take a little time for myself, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, just talking about, like, the fact that you were burnt out, I think is, like, you know, kind of, not a big deal, but I think it's important, you know, because it's something, like I said, creative people just don't talk about.
That's a good point. Creative people and artists always find their way back
to it. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's like, I'm burnt out for a week and then they come back to it. Or I'm burnt out for a few years and come back to it. And that's what happened with the acting part.
Mm-hmm.
And also the track with being I was making good money.
Sure.
And it wasn't what I wanted to do.
Mm.
And when
that's the boat I'm in right now. I have a career. I'm still basically doing IT I was back then. And I fucking hate it. But I make so much money at it. And there's nothing else I can do right now where I can make that kind of money.
Yeah.
Sure, if I was in my 20s and didn't have a wife and, mm-hmm. and kids and, yeah. and responsibilities and a condo and all that, yeah. I could crash on on friends' couches and go and do open mics and do auditions and stuff and get into the point where I was, working, doing what I actually am passionate about. But I'm 45 and I have responsibilities, so
exactly.
so the podcast will have to suffice.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I know some of our friends who mm-hmm. had other... that we started out there, they were young,
yeah.
and they just stuck with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And me, I after our company expanded, a recruiter found me other work in the company, and I was bold. I turned it down.
Yeah.
And then I was like, now what do I do? And I went back to waiting tables, which I thought would be good for acting. Waiting tables is not a good job for artists.
No.
It's not.
No.
It has a different kind of pressure and drain.
Yeah.
Soul drain. Yeah.
Somebody in an interview once asked Samuel L. Jackson why he keeps taking every single role that's offered to him, and his answer was straight up, because I'm a bad waiter.
Yeah.
Like, for real.
I'm a terrible one. I'm a nice one, but mm-hmm. I'm terrible. And,
well, but that's the thing about food service. It's so much physical work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's so draining, and there's so much pressure, and it's so much...
Well, and also the way our culture is anybody in a service job is,
right.
pawn scum and
right.
should be treated
yeah, and
as
it's,
such.
Yeah, emotionally,
it's kind of gross.
It's emotionally, it rakes you over the coals.
Yeah.
And you make so little money. Unless you can get in at a posh restaurant where you're getting, $60 tips with a meal, with one meal.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. that's one thing, but
yeah.
those jobs are few and far between, and it's food service is awful.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a soul-suck kind of job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes you feel like you're a prostitute, because
yeah.
you have to be nice to the guests or else you won't get
emotional
tipped.
Labor.
Yeah.
Nobody
it totally is.
Thinks about that or factors that yeah. in.
And then I've seen a lot of actors... Then it becomes a priority because you pick the shifts over your art, and you're like, I got to stick here and I got to take the shifts and everything, and not the auditions, and, mm-hmm. and it's just a downward spiral. But I came back, recently with a vengeance, because I was burnt out, like mm-hmm. Katie was saying, and then kind of tried different things close to it. I was an agent for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I did that in Studio City. I learned a lot. But I found out that I love actors, but also hate actors.
Mm-hmm.
It's I can't believe some of the stuff they would pull, and the flaky actors. And then I even tried casting for 5 seconds, and that's too hot, too much pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I learned that about a thing about, you have a deadline. They'll say, throw all that out. We don't want that anymore. But the deadline doesn't change. So all your work was done. It's we don't get more time.
Yeah.
We got to do everything over. It's
See, I write that into my graphic design contracts that
yeah.
if they want to start from scratch, when we're already into the final phases, first of all, they have to pay me to redo the entire project, and they have to extend the deadline. Otherwise, it's not happening.
Yeah.
That's just reasonable.
That's smart, yeah.
yeah.
The people who, all the, remember a few years ago with the Oscars and it's Oscar Sunday, so the visual effects companies.
Oh,
they
Rhythm and Hughes.
Yeah,
yeah.
They
yeah,
killed
yeah.
themselves because mm-hmm. they wouldn't build that in.
Right.
The artistic people would say, we don't
yeah.
want that, change it. And they'd already gotten paid and spent all the money because they did mm-hmm. the per project thing.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically with Life of Pi. And let's be real, that movie wouldn't exist without the special
yeah.
effects.
Right.
It'd yeah. just be a green screen,
yeah.
And somebody confronted Ang Lee at the Oscars, why didn't you pay your VFX artist? And he was like, oh, it was already expensive enough. I shouldn't have to pay him again. And I'm like, you won your Oscar because
yep.
of these people. Yep. How dare you?
Yep.
Get your head out your ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Even at the top level, it's because the graphic designer is in that service role, just like in food service, just like something else, and they're treated like their time is not important for some reason.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that the Rhythm and Hughes thing kind of lit a fire for a lot of people in visual effects to unionize, but they're still not a union.
No.
They're still trying to get that,
Yeah. I saw a mini documentary about that, the Rhythm and mm-hmm. Hughes case, and it was something in the culture chasing the money and they're so talented and Life of Pi wouldn't have existed without their expertise, but they something about the way their structure was built.
Mm-hmm.
It was they weren't the only company that got an Oscar and then went bankrupt.
Right, right. And again, a lot of it is because, you know, like, these jobs go to the lowest bidder. So it's like this race to the bottom. What can you do for me at the cheapest price? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, the cheapest price is always going to win. So these studios are competing to do more and more with, like, you know, a shorter budget and, like, keep delivering good stuff. So,
and one would think, because of the absolutely astronomical, and I did double down on that on purpose, levels of profit that studios see,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and those executives, you know, reap the benefits of, that they'd be able to, and because it's an artistic business, mm-hmm. that they would be able to parse out that money better, to
yeah.
to account for failures, or account for oopses, or account for redesigns at
yeah.
last minute, and,
mm-hmm.
and pay people what they're worth. And
mm-hmm.
it's another thing of the haves versus the have-nots. It's always
yeah.
it's in every facet and every permutation of business. It, when it comes down to it, it is a business, and it is business as, you know, as usual, just like everything else.
Which is why we need to destroy capitalism,
right.
but that's
yeah.
a discussion
yeah.
for another time.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Oh, it brings a whole other topic about, you know, when do artists, like, cheat themselves? Like, do they give it away for free? A lot of actors give away stuff for free.
Oh, yeah.
Both, yeah.
You're right.
I've never worked for free.
That is smart.
Never,
you're a smart
ever.
Artist.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Because the actors, like, this last year, there was this huge debate on the whole 99-seat theater plan in L.A. That's most of what theater
that,
is
yeah.
here.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it, because I'm also in the Actors Equity Association Union. It's the stage union.
Mm-hmm.
And the fight that people had was, because 99-seat theaters, you have, I'm sure you guys have friends who are doing this play here, all
mm-hmm.
these small
yeah.
99-seat theaters.
Yeah.
That plan was never supposed to morph into the L.A. theater culture that it became. And there was this fight, this faction called Pro 99, that was fighting to keep that, it's not even a contract, it was agreement with the union, so that union people could work and not get paid, you know, union dues. They got a small little stipend.
If it was a small enough theater, that the theater wasn't responsible for paying union scale, basically.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
so union
so
actors.
This is stuff like Fringe Festival and
yeah.
like all of that, yeah.
So you professional actors, union actors, trained actors, could be used by producers, you know, for their excellent acting skills, and then you would get the actor would get the experience of that play
mm-hmm.
or role, and but then it got out of control because they started fighting the union, and
mm-hmm.
other markets like, you know, Seattle or Chicago's like, wait a minute, if LA doesn't have to pay their actors, why should we pay their actors? And it became this crazy thing in LA where it got vicious, like
mm-hmm.
we're talking pitchforks and you know, flames, torches, yeah.
yeah.
And the bottom line is like, wait a minute, you all, the Pro 99 people, this is just, I didn't get in the fight.
Right.
And if actors hear me on this, they're like, oh, I'll get you. Like,
what,
the bottom line is like, wait, you guys are fighting to not get paid? That's ridiculous, really, people. I get
mm-hmm.
the value of it, but it can't be the whole L.A. theater culture.
No, no.
It can't.
And then you had theaters that were purposely downsizing, removing seats out of the theaters
yep.
so that they only had 99 seats
yep.
in their theater, just so that, you know, and they were still charging the same ticket prices and still blah, blah, and then getting away with not being
yep.
able to pay their actors.
And yeah, and other artists.
Right.
They really ripped them off.
Yeah.
And then they were whining, oh, we won't be able to function. Well, you shouldn't function if you can't do your business model, start paying your actors. And it was just minimum wage. It's still not enough.
Yeah.
But and it wasn't a culture that developed theaters into only a handful, like less than, like, I think only 3 or 4 in the 30 years of that plan became actual legit theaters.
Right.
I think East West Players did, the Colony Theater here in Burbank did, and Noise Within. That's like how many hundreds of theaters and only like 3 or 4 moved on?
Yeah.
But yeah. And then speaking of, like, when do you decide to do your film for free stuff?
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
I just did a...
We have a lot of former guests of the podcast and friends who do short films and things
uh-huh.
like that, and
yeah.
they're not paying themselves, they're not paying, they're doing everything on a shoestring budget and everything because there's no, they're not getting funding from a studio or anything to make an independent short film or whatever, so they're doing everything as just for the love of the art of it, but they're more doing it for themselves, and then they're...
But that's the thing, is, like, I can do my art for myself for creative self-expression, or I could do art for other people for pay. So the only time, like, I'll work for free is if it's something that, like, I'm doing for myself. Like, just because you have a shoestring budget or, like, we can't afford it or it'd be great exposure doesn't mean that I need to put my time into making your vision happen.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know?
Right.
The only time I will make your vision happen is if I'm getting something out of it, like money.
Right. Yeah.
Because really, when bottom line is, other than the art that goes into it and the time that you put in the art and your particular product as part of that whole of their project, mm-hmm. you're not passionate about that project. You don't care about that project. It's bread and butter to you more than the art of it is part of your who you are and the art the artist and the craft of it. But mm-hmm. other than that, it's like, this is your vision, not mine.
Yeah, so, and there's such a line for me between the things that I do for clients and what I do for my own creative self-expression, you know? And I think having that line makes it really easy to say no to those people who are like, but this is my dream, this is my passion project. It's like, and that's great. And I will support you in that as a friend. Yeah. But if you want me to work for you, you need to pay me.
Yeah, like, that's smart. If more artists did that, it wouldn't create that kind of mess where people are someone else is waiting on deck and will do that.
Yeah,
you know, and then people start to think that they can take advantage of artists. Mm-hmm.
Why do so many artists put themselves out there like that?
I think part of it is just that the idea that, like, jobs are scarce, and so anytime you get an opportunity, you should be grateful. Like, one of my friends, he's an amazing illustrator. He does work for Magic the Gathering. He does most of the art, like 80-something percent of the art for the Star Wars trading card games. Mm-hmm. And we were having this discussion, and he's been, you know, doing the Star Wars trading card game, like, art for 6 or 7 years, never once asked for a raise, you know? And he's like, oh, well, they have fixed prices, but, like, I want more money, but I'm afraid to ask. And he was saying he's afraid to ask because he knows there are thousands of other artists in line behind him who would jump at the chance to do Star Wars art. And, you know, I get that, and I understand that fear and that anxiety, but on the other hand, I was trying to tell him, you have been consistently delivering quality illustrations for them on deadline for the past 7 years. Like, you're making them money. You are generating profit for this company, and it is more of a headache for them to replace you and take a chance on someone else who, like, may not give them as good art as you can do, may not make their deadlines, you know, than it is to just give you, like, a couple hundred more dollars like you're asking for. Like, think of it that way. Like, you have to remember, you are making these people money, and you are generating profit for them, and you deserve, you know, a slice of that. Like, that's all there is to it. Like, yeah, there are other people who would jump at the chance to take your job, but you already have it. And they already know they can trust you, so just fucking go for it. Like, don't give your power away. He actually took a job with Konami, and I think he started, I don't know, he moved out to Vegas for it, but he's, like, their lead art person now, and is on salary and is making good money. But, like, you know, it's not just him. It's something that's symptomatic of a lot of artists. Like, a lot of my art friends that I talk to, it's like, no, your skill has value. You generate profit for people. You deserve to get paid. Like, I'm constantly having to reinforce that for people, and, like, I don't mind doing it, but it's also just kind of sad, you know, that I have to always give, like, my super talented friends these pep talks.
Like I said earlier, if people had the kind of personal artistic integrity you did and understood that the skills that you acquired the expertise you bring and artistic skills you bring aren't for free.
Yeah.
You know, actors do that all the time. I know actors who... It's like, that's all they do. And it's like, they went to school for it. They majored in it. They've taken acting classes. And yet they're constantly just giving away for free. This little Friends project, this webisodes thing, the 99 Seat Theater things. It's like, when do you want to be a professional actor? Do you find it too hard? It is a competitive field.
Right.
I'm coming back with a vengeance, having kind of been burnt out. And it's like wow, if I had this kind of like courage and drive when I was 22, I'd be on the red carpet tonight.
Right,
I don't know. I mean, I'm 28 and I've always had this drive. Like, you know, I don't think it's fair to like judge your younger self like that, you know? Like be a little
I judge my
nicer.
Younger self every goddamn day.
Yeah. Well, I judge my younger self for like, you know, the dumb like kid things that I did, you know, especially when I first started drinking and I was 21 and it's like, woo, that's party.
See, I didn't have any of that. I judge my former self for not having gotten into, not stuck in drama class in high school and not, you know, getting an arts degree and mm-hmm. going out and trying stand-up and going out and joining comedy sports in Denver and doing all that stuff when I was 19, 20, 21.
Yeah.
You know, when I had a wife who would basically let me go and do that stuff, sort of. But, you know, that was, I kick myself every day for that. I do. Yeah. I mean, it's that thing of everybody out there should be following their passion. Our society
Absolutely.
As a whole would be so much better if people were actually doing what their aptitudes, what they're born to do.
Not just that, but society should, you know, give money to things that have cultural value.
Oh, yeah, and value.
Like, I think that's the other part of the equation is, like, you know, you can sit here and kick yourself for not being in, you know, drama class and improv when you were, like, in your 20s, but you did the best with the tools and information you had, you know?
No, I didn't. but I see what you're saying, but really, I was scared and lazy and just not true. It was also a big, and not to get too deep down a psychological rabbit hole here, but mm-hmm. but I was for a longest, you know, for decades living behind a wall of fear mm-hmm. and not following my passion and not believing that I was worthy of being able to go and do what I was passionate about.
Yeah, a lot of other artists suffer with that. Maybe that's why not more like you, Katie, where you're like, nope. Hey, this is what I get paid for, and that kind of fear. Recently, I've been starting to kick butt with my career because I have embraced the fear, and here's mm-hmm. how it works. So my younger self wouldn't have known this, so I need to be this age. And when I started out as a 20-something, I had an amazing career. I started out something that most people can't picture. I started out singing and dancing at theme parks and cruise ships.
I
had a musical theater career. It's like
my cousin does that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people continue with that all the way through, go all the way to Broadway. Mm-hmm. I was in New York for a while and I was doing well.
But that's what my cousin is doing. He went to Broadway. He's directing and writing plays now.
Yeah.
So
I got to explore that, and it feels like I had a whole separate career, which I did. And now, you know, I moved to LA because I wanted to do TV and film. And commercial work. And
you have been.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's been fun.
I noticed.
Yeah. Thank you. And maybe that's why you invited me to talk a little bit about it, because it's a neat perspective, because we know so many actors. It's like, have you been anything? No. And when they ask me nowadays, have you? It's like, yes, I can. Have I seen any TV? It's like, actually, you have. And it's cool to be in that position, because a lot of actors mm-hmm. keep struggling and they're not.
Sure, sure.
Well,
the thing I want to say about fear, which is a cool thing, and you'll relate to the nerd part of
mm-hmm,
us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in Avengers, remember how Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner and the Hulk in the first one, he goes, you want to know my secret? And he's about to turn into the Hulk. He goes, I'm always angry.
Always angry.
So recently, with my training and everything, I realized that I'm always afraid.
Always afraid.
What you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I was always afraid. So, and it would stop me. It stopped me, you know, in the time that we've known each other, almost 2 decades, here and there, would just stop me cold. And I'm like, now it's not stopping me because I'm always afraid. So then do it anyway.
Right.
And my younger self would not be able to understand that.
Yeah,
now
right.
It's like, it's not like you could say I'm brave, but it's more like, I'm still afraid.
Well,
I'm still afraid.
Courage isn't the absence of fear. It's acknowledging the fear and then still doing what you want despite the fear.
Yeah.
You know?
That's finally what I have, and it's serving me. And it's serving me in cool things. Things are happening and clicking. Like, I just... for years, I've been afraid to take improv, and I finally took it 2 years ago, and I loved it. It's like, this is fun. It's a great skill set. Almost mm-hmm. everyone you know in L.A. has taken improv, IOS, UCB, Groundlings, and it's just a skill that people have to have here in L.A. So I finally took it, and then just last weekend, just a week ago, I got to do my IOS debut and sketch comedy debut, and I thought it was the coolest thing. It had all Asian performers and all Asian writers. It was like
awesome.
An Asian... SNL. And I'm like, this is so important. It was only the second one they'd ever done. And not only that, I was on stage with, like, respected Asian actors, like a woman named Linda Park, who was on Enterprise with Scott Bakula.
Yeah.
And people, my other nerd friends, like, oh, Linda Park. I'm like, who's she again? And they're like, Enterprise? I'm like, ooh, I missed that one. But she, I was a Voyager person. Yeah, I like Voyager. And then I got to work with Amy Hill, whose career I just love. She's on three different series right now. She's on Just Add Magic for, I think, Amazon, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is on CW. Mm-hmm. Talk about 20 years ago, she played the grandma on All American Girl with Margaret Cho.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
So she's this Asian character lady. She looks mixed race. She is, because she told me, because everyone thinks that she's Hawaiian, and I go, now they're claiming, because she's playing a Filipino character on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, they said, oh, you're Filipino, and they're claiming her. That's like, no. She's half Japanese and half Finnish, she grew up in San Francisco or in Seattle.
So basically what you're saying is she's the one who should have been playing Emma Stone's character in that awful Hawaiian movie.
Yeah. Something like that. That's what a mixed race person is.
And I love Emma Stone, but shame on the studio for casting a non-Asian person in that role.
She doesn't look mixed race at all. She looks like a white girl.
Yeah, you know? There are tons of mixed race Asians. I know my neighbors are, and I'm
Olivia
so
Munn, and I'm, well, there's a
but
lot of
ones that look it.
Sure.
Even my neighbor who is half Chinese, and I'm so mean to her, I'm like, you don't look it. It's like, I don't buy it.
Well, you and I used to talk about Margaret Cho all the time.
Mm-hmm. I fucking love Margaret Cho.
She
makes
me
amazing.
Cry and pee. She's so funny.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, and she set the now it's so popular. That I live down the street from the 99 Ranch Market in the Valley, and they have a big banner with the Fresh Off the Boat and Dr. Ken, both on ABC. They're like, oh, we got one Asian sitcom we haven't seen in 20 plus years.
Right.
We'll buy another one. And they have it on this big banner to try to get, you know, people.
I like Dr. Ken, because I like Ken Jeong. I like his brand of crazy.
Yeah, I like
and him. And he has this character that he is in pretty much everything. And you know, this kind of like evil gangster dictator in his own mind.
Right.
Out set loose on the world. He was that way in Community. He was that way in the Hangover movies.
Community. Oh my
God. And doctor, and now he's a doctor on this show.
Yeah.
And he's just as fucked up and crazy in that as he is in everything else.
It's great.
And it's so great. And then his family is just so normal. They're just normal American family. Even though they are Asian, they don't touch on a lot of that necessarily and feature, these are Asian people. They're not doing that.
Right.
Well, like they did with the Margaret Cho sitcom.
Yeah.
It was just Asian joke, and it was like clearly written and produced by white people. Clearly not, and they're always, she had this, that was, she used to do stand-up about it, about how telling her that she's not Asian enough, she doesn't look Asian enough, and she's too fat, and she's not thin enough, and she's not this, and she's not that.
I think
I'm just me. I am an Asian person, and I am just me.
Right.
I think, like, every single person of color at one point has come up against that. America Ferrera was talking about racism in the industry, and she said she went for an audition, and they were like, we need you to sound more Latina, and she's like, do you want me to do this in Spanish? And they were like, no, just sound more Latina, and she was like, it took me a minute, but then I realized they wanted me to do the audition in, like, broken English.
Yeah. That's always awkward, because I'm not that great at it. Mm-hmm. I do it, and mine's a little bit more cartoony, like, okay. One shocking thing, a few years ago I did a Charles Bush play. Charles Bush writes, like, Vampire, Lesbians of Sodom, all those crazy plays, and usually has a character that's in drag, a male actor in drag, that he played. And this one was called Shanghai Moon, and it was more making fun of the pre-code movies, you know, that were all innuendo like, really politically incorrect stuff.
You bet.
So, but I noticed it was so, because they were determined to have the lead an Asian male, and they kept losing their actors. So finally came along, it's like, you know, auditioned for it and everything, and I said, okay, I won't bail on you. I will see this through to the end, because they had lost, like, four actors. And they were about to go, let's just cast them white. But there's two other characters they cast who are Asian, they cast as Caucasian. And those guys were so good at the Asian accent, I was embarrassed. It was so funny. It's like, oh my gosh, that girl has a better Asian accent than me. I'm Asian or Chinese accent. Right, right, so, right. I'll keep working at it. I'm good at other accents. I'll just treat it like how I do other accents because I've gotten to do Scottish and British and Cockney and Brooklyn, before on stage. And it is comical to see that. In fact, that iOS sketch thing, two cool things that were Asian centric and one that wasn't. One was one of the sketches was about Chinese New Year, which just happened. The Asian Spring Festival just ended last week.
Sure.
And it started on February 8th. So we did rap songs and different songs about Chinese New Year culture. So that was very, I'm an Asian sketch. Then the one that wasn't was one where we were all doing Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And the character Brick, which I missed when I was little because, God, Paul Newman and Elizabeth Taylor are stunning in that movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I missed the part that he was closeted homosexual in that. I was like, what? I didn't see that.
Totally.
So this sketch was like, he just says it out, right, and we don't get it. I played
Tennessee,
Big Daddy.
Tennessee Williams was a mad, subversive, fucked up, drunk, crazy man. And he every play that, everything he ever wrote was about alcoholism, sex, and thinly veiled homosexuality.
That was
everything.
And this one, that's when the character
Glass Menagerie, Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. Did he write Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, too? I mean, I'm probably wrong about that. But everything that he wrote, it was just dripping with that. Fortunately, we had a drama teacher when we were doing scenes from that in drama class in high school who would tell us about that. It's all about sex. It's all about sex and thinly veiled sexuality, thinly veiled homosexuality, and alcoholism. Everybody's a fucking drunk.
Exactly. So the guy who wrote this sketch, which was so fun, I got to play Big Daddy in it. It was about that, and we had the whole Southern accents. It's great to see all these Asian actors playing it. And then
give you a big hat?
I didn't have a big hat, but I had this colonel mustache.
Nice.
And then I would be. The sketch was exactly that. Instead of being thinly veiled, it was like blatant.
Blatant, blam.
Brick would say, "No, I'm gay. I'm not sleeping with you, Maggie." And then I came out. It's like, "Is it because you're drinking?" I'd come in and I'd be like, I kept referring to you. If you just put down that bottle and everything, and then at the end, it had a little button hook that kind of was had a kind of a racist button or punchline. But anyway, I wanted to mention something earlier about people giving it away for free. Here's something that people don't know, because especially tonight with the millionaire people about actors. When actors get, because the job I did on Modern Family, that's the ones they want, but there's such a fight to get those things. They're co-star and guest star roles, and people are fighting to get it, and a lot of my friends, they don't have agents who can help get them. I have a really great agent now, and I'm going out for them a lot. I booked one on Adam Ruins Everything from College Humor. I did a fun thing on that. And here's something that people won't talk about, because it involves money and whatever. So I had four lines that sounded like two. I had a great scene with Ed O'Neill and Jesse Tyler Ferguson. I played kind of a surly, it hasn't aired yet. It's going to air in 4 weeks. A surly karaoke bar, 24-hour karaoke bar manager. owner. And the pay, because I kind of, long story short, I kind of went through the ringer to get that role, because my agent kept calling me and saying they want someone edgier, but you're their first choice. And then they decided to go with that more character person, but then they changed their mind and put me back in the running, and then I ended up getting it. But what people don't talk about was how amazing, if you get to work on a show like that, you're treated. Things that people don't talk about, it makes you feel like a movie star, like tonight. And maybe that's why they walk around like they're or something. On a small scale where I'm playing the co-star role coming in, my trailer, ridiculous. Like, it had a living room, a couch, a stereo. I didn't get to use it. Private bathroom, a shower, refrigerator, all that stuff. So, of course, when I was done, I took pictures and here I am. I had three production assistants assigned to me, one at base camp, one had to wait outside in the cold while I was getting ready in my trailer, then drive me in the little golf cart to set. Then I had a PA assigned to me for the set. That was one of my friends. And then working with them, they're pros. Ed O'Neill, so friendly. you know, and I'm, you know, I kept thinking, could my part get cut out? Because sometimes it gets cut out.
Sure, it happens. It kind of editing.
Yeah, and this one it wouldn't work because all of a sudden they would appear somewhere, and so hopefully I'll stay intact. But anyway, my agent, because of the hassle with the thing, he negotiated a quote for me. So I'm what a quote is your rate. It's above scale. So every step of the way was sweet. And a lot of people don't talk about that because a lot of the actors I know are giving it away for free.
Yeah.
They think it's impossible to get that because once you get those, you have to get more of those and then graduate to getting more guest stars and then you want recurring, recurring and then series regulars. I have two friends who are, whose TV shows are in their fifth season now and so they did their 100th episode. So they don't talk about this either. Both those friends who have that are now, because of the syndication deals and everything, are multimillionaires. Most people won't know if I mention their names who they are unless they're fans of the show.
Yeah.
But it's part of that industry, like even what I experienced doing a guest star or a co-star on Modern Family, you know, also because it's such a popular show, and when it reruns, you know,
you're going to get residuals from that. Get, and eventually, I don't think they're in syndication yet, Modern Family, but they will be, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're in the seventh season, so they...
They have to be in syndication now.
And it's so popular, but I think maybe they wait on another deal because they are. I remember one of the cable networks that has them, but it's such a beloved show. But that's the part of the being the business of the actor or business of the artist that the actors or that I know forget about, just like you standing by it. That's what actors have to do. It's like, no, I have to, if I'm a trained professional actor, I have to work at those jobs, not take my time and focus on all the freebies, which so many of my actors friends do. You should spend as much time getting your representation that is effective for you, being business smart about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a friend from our days who, I won't mention her name, but she was an amazing actor, and the business part of it killed it. She went back home to the East Coast.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, many artists, like, they don't want to learn the business side of things, you know? And, like, you've seen my bookshelves. I have, like, literally, like, half, like, graphic design, technical stuff, like how to draw, how to paint, and then the other half is like small business for dummies and like marketing for graphic designers and, you know, like how to make money as an illustrator. Like, it's so important to know the business end because, like, when you treat your art like a business, that's how you're going to get paid like a business. You know?
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah. I'm learning that business part now.
Yeah, like, it sucks. Oh. It sucks, and it's boring, and I hate having to do it, but, like, that's how I can afford my apartment, and that's how I can have a car, and that's how I can, make this a life, you know? Yeah. So,
and you're one of the few people I know who, other than going and working in a, like, corporate graphic design or 3D illustration type gig, you're the one person I know who's like a freelance graphic designer who's actually a functioning, you know, artist.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I have my own car, I have my own apartment, you know, I have all of that. Like, I'm a for real adult, but, you know, I do it all freelance. And, you know, one part of that is because that's just the industry. There aren't a lot of, like, those, you know, W-2, I'm an employee jobs out there. And then even if they are there, like, you know, especially with, like, a lot of mobile game studios and, like, you know, tech startups and stuff like that, like, you might be at that job for a year to 6 months and then the company goes under.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, like, learning to be agile. But I know, like, I wouldn't be able to have the life that I do if I hadn't taken the time to, like, learn business and really learn it. And, you know, also, like, have people in my corner. Like, I have a lawyer and I have an accountant and I have all of those, like, grown-up people on my team who help me to function.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, exactly. And those, for those friends that I've, who have really made it, the ones who are on their fifth seasons and 100th episodes, you can always tell some, I always do this, when you go on to the IMDb Pro and see their representation team, you know, like their agents and managers.
Yeah.
To me, when the actor I know has made it, when you see that they have listed, they have a publicist listed. Publicists are expensive. And also, too, legal representative, meaning they're entertainment attorneys.
Yeah.
So it's one thing to have a manager or an agent, but when you, that's my low gauge, that person has arrived. When I look at, you know, some of my friends, it's like,
yeah,
you have now a publicist on record and also an entertainment attorney. But yeah, that's so smart to learn the business part of it, because a lot of actors and artists are resistant to it.
Yeah.
Then,
and it's boring.
Yeah,
I admit,
boring.
It's totally boring. And I don't like having to, you know, like take the time out to learn this stuff or read these books. But again, that's how I'm able to, like, have the life that I do. Like, it's worth it, you know?
Right. And I had a friend when I was who works all the time, and he has done enough co-stars. He should be turning down co-stars to do just guest stars. But he and his representation are like, we just take the work. But you won't move forward if you don't put, you know, draw the line. Mm-hmm. Same thing, he was a little cynical, and he said, oh, you have a quote, but you'll probably go back to scale. It's like, not necessarily. There will be certain circumstances where I have to, but a quote now, and it's like, you have to meet that quote.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I can't do your job. And it's like, well, what if you lose that job? It's like, well, you know, I can't, you know, where's that integrity line?
Right. Yeah.
Will I sell out and give that up?
And you have to be willing to walk away from stuff that isn't going to treat you fairly or treat you right. Like, I walk away from things all the time when they, like, want to try and underpay me, or, like, you know, they want something at, like, you know, an okay price, but it's a super tight deadline. And, you know, like, it's not wrong to say no. It's not wrong to walk away. Like, you still have to maintain that power and maintain those boundaries and just let people know, like, there are certain things you will do and there are certain things you won't do, you know? Like, you don't just have to take a job because it's in front of you. Like, there will be other jobs.
Yep. a lot of actors just take what's in front of them, even if it's like a freebie.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say more about, before you were mentioning about the fear and the training, and then you did take the safe job. You know, a lot of the people we work with did, and, you know, I knew, that's why we connected, that you're so artistic and you liked fun stuff.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and, but
I'm always the crazy, so, I'm always the crazy artsy guy wherever I work. I'm always the guy with the long hair, and if I, you know, had my druthers, I'd have my nails painted all the time and wearing my Doctor Who shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
And,
you should have your nails painted all the time.
I should,
because it looks fabulous.
Well, thank you. And I love doing it, and, but, you know, I have to play the game, too, in order to just fit in. So.
I need you to do my nails. Like, I'm so bad at that.
Of course, according to Virginia Jones, when I do my nails, it looks like I did them with my butthole.
Is that what he reviews or something?
Well, she said, I did my nails right after I did them, and they were still sloppy and messy. It's like, but you let them dry, and then you get the shower, and you scrub off all the extra. That's part of the deal.
That's the secret.
You do it slop, and then you wait 2 hours for everything to dry, and then, you know, you do your nails, like, 3 hours before you're going to go out for the night.
This podcast is so educational.
I know,
like,
right?
I never knew
so here's the
this.
Secret for people who, you know, who don't have time to get manicures and pedicures and who aren't picture perfect at their nails first run through, or who want to sit there with a Q-tip dipped in, you know, a polish remover to get all the little mistakes out of the way.
Man, I don't have time for that.
Yeah, exactly. So you do it slop. You put on your undercoat, your two coats, and if you have top coat, you do top coat, and then you just let it sit, and you just let the nails dry and harden for a couple hours, and then when you go and get in the shower and you wash your hair and you take your little nail brush or you just take your, eventually it softens up to where you can just use your thumb and get all the stuff off of the skin around it, and you get out of the shower and you have perfect nails. So
that's
the way it works.
Brilliant. I'm so bad at nails. I usually just put like 1.5 or 2 coats of black on, and
let's
then I'm
see.
Like, good,
Eskrima and German longsword and archery and
Muay Thai and Kendo
and, you know,
lifting 3 times a week.
And quest for dick. So, you know, you have things that keep your hands busy, so it's hard to maintain a good manicure. So.
That's funny. Well, it's too busy to have fun nails.
That's right.
Too busy. Yeah.
That's someone I need on my team. I need a manicurist.
But yeah, I took the safe job because, you know, back in those days, IT work, working with computers was easy. It was that thing that I could, everybody's an expert at something.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, I wasn't told when I was younger that in order to be, to get into acting and comedy and all that, you have to go and do it and suck at it.
Right.
You can't just be good right out of the gate. Nobody does that. Everybody right. goes and sucks at it and it's the people who just keep doing it
right.
that eventually get somewhere with it. And nobody yeah. told me that. Had somebody told me that and had I had the right kind of support system at home yeah. to be able to allow myself to do that. I mean, back when we knew each other, I was in LA Connection and I was doing oh, yeah. some improv and some sketch and stuff, but not much else. And loved it, loved every minute of it, but I was right. also paying to do it because it's that school thing
yep.
and you're paying to be there. Fine. It was one of those things where I kept escalating in levels and getting to better and better levels that had better show times during the week, but then I would get moved up based on merit, and then two people above me would leave or go out of that group, and two other people behind me would just get moved up just because to fill right. space. And
yeah,
I always felt like my merit was being kind of like the rug of merit was being pulled out from under me each time, so it was a little disheartening. But had I stuck with that, or had I jumped ship from there and gone over to Groundlings or Acme or one of the other ones where the craft of it, of the way that they teach you how to do it, because every improv theater or company has its own way of teaching or has its yeah. own thing that they focus on.
Yeah.
Like at Second City, it's all about character study,
right.
and it's very similar at the Groundlings.
Yep.
But then Acme is much more about the kind of games, the kind of Who's Line type thing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then LA Connection, well, that's just LA Connection, but so, you know, had I stuck with that and jumped over and gone somewhere else with it, I might have stuck with it and stuff, but as I said, it was one of those things where I didn't have the right support system at home to keep encouraging me to do that,
yeah.
and it was costing money, but I should have, looking back, I wish I would have stuck with it, and I wish I would have stayed with it, because when I did sketch with Christian Roman,
mm-hmm.
the sketch that I wrote that my ex-wife and I sat up giggling about and sat up in bed one night and wrote together,
mm-hmm.
that's the only sketch that ran the entire 6-week run of that sketch show.
Oh, okay.
Every other sketch got cycled in and out.
Okay.
But mine was the first sketch of the show, and it ran the whole run.
Right.
And so that, to me, tells me that, hey, I could, at least my ex-wife and I, could write sketches and do that.
Right.
But I didn't get that support that I needed
yeah.
when I needed a voice of encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing that a lot of people don't think about, too, is support system is very important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you and Danny and all of my friends have always been, like, mm-hmm. so, so supportive in my art. Like, as long as I've known you guys, and you've known me since mm-hmm. I was in college, like,
mm-hmm.
everybody has just been, like, so great. And, like, you know, there have been times where my friends have believed in me more than I've believed in myself. And that's, like, one of the things that keeps me going. Like, had I not had that, you know, community and support system, I might not be an artist. You know, that's just the facts.
Yeah.
So.
No, the support system is important. And if you don't have one, you have to kind of create your own if
yeah.
you're on your own. That's what I'm giving myself a lot from this, you know, this next huge pass at it and doing
mm-hmm.
so well. It's like, okay, you are supporting yourself. You have nothing loose, so go for it.
Yeah.
Embrace the fear.
Yeah.
Also, it takes a push, and there's certain things people have to prioritize that people don't understand. That now at this age and perspective, I know what the myths are and what the things you have to do. Like you were talking about
mm-hmm.
the business part of it. There's yeah. also training in order to get the jobs instead of just for the fun of it
right.
is what you have to do. Like a lot of actors I know who are getting in the business, they think, oh, acting is just wing it. It's like, no. The actors who are the best actors who look like they're not acting. Yeah, exactly. I love how you're laughing like you know.
Oh, yeah.
Are trained. They're so
right.
trained. They have
yeah.
techniques.
The ability to make that look effortless and look like that's years and years
yeah.
and years of personal intense internalization and study and self-observation
mm-hmm.
and it's craft. It's crafting.
Yeah.
You are crafting.
Yeah, totally.
I was laughing because people say the same thing about art.
Oh, yeah.
And a
yeah.
lot of people say the same thing about graphic design. Like, oh, I can just download Photoshop and make a logo. And it's like, that's adorable. Oh, look at you.
Exactly.
You know?
I've had a copy of Photoshop since 1998 and I still can't do crap with it.
Yeah, well, and like, you know, if you're a graphic designer who's worth your salt, you know you would never do a logo in Photoshop because Photoshop is raster-based. You should be doing something, in Illustrator, because it's vector and you can make it any size, you know. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know, I'll go out for jobs and people will be like, oh, your price is too high. Like, we'll just have the intern do it, or we'll have somebody
Photoshop is
like,
not for design. Photoshop is for taking an existing thing and altering it.
Yeah.
And making
it's
changes.
For photo retouching, cleanup. You can illustrate in Photoshop and get painterly with it, but it's not usually for design.
It's meant to touch up. Existing artwork.
Yeah.
But like, you know, people will be like, oh, you're too expensive, we'll have the intern do it. Or like, you know, my cousin has Photoshop, or like my kid has Photoshop, and
Good luck with
that. Yeah, I'll see you in 6 months when they fuck it up and you come crying back to me.
For every artist, for graphic artists, for actors, when they think that, oh, we can shortcut it, good luck with that. You know, I have a friend who's just entering it now. He's, you know, a little younger than you, but has, you know, three sons, a wife. He's like, the other day I was explaining, it's like, look, you have great instincts, but you have no technique. And and he's like, what's technique? It's like,
oh, honey.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, honey.
And you know, but, you know, he's just riding his instincts now, and it's not going to serve him long term.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might know this actor from that Cabin in the Woods horror spoof movie where it had Thor, Chris Hemsworth, and it was making fun of all the different genres of horror.
Yeah.
And there was the technician people who took bets and stuff. Lead technician, his name is Richard Jenkins, and he's balding with glasses. He did a movie that on Oscars Day, he was nominated for an Oscar for Best Actor several years ago called The Visitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never seen a role where it's like absolutely was no acting involved. It's like, how is he doing that? But again, we're talking about technique. Years of technique, so it looks like he's absolutely not acting one bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's the goal of acting is to convince an audience that this is that's just you.
Yeah.
And that's the whole goal.
It looked like we were just peering into his life and you know. But the artists, the actors who don't spend time on their craft too, it's an investment. I take two different classes a week right now. If I could, I would do more. I probably will. And one of them is strictly for business. It's a great class that's for audition prep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to help. Each week we do pass at a co-star and a guest star. Guest stars are the bigger roles.
Okay.
Meaning co-stars are usually the one-liner, two-liners. Those are actually the hardest.
Oh.
Those are the hardest. You think that, oh, just come and throw away the line. No. This one great coach I have who teaches that class gets you to do an arc, a beginning, middle, and end on one line.
Holy shit.
And I'm like, how do you do that? But that's the people who book the roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's that is strictly for, it's not it's, it, there's some acting technique involved, but it's mostly like an investment in a class that helps you getting a job. Just like maybe someone, like an artist like yourself, would need some help, like, oh, I'm not good at selling my package or interviewing.
Yeah.
So you'd go and take an interview class or whatever. So that's this class.
There aren't enough of those classes for artists. Like, every artist I've talked to, and this is true of, like, my college education, like, a lot of the, like, business classes are severely lacking. Like, my school only had half a semester of what they called professional studies.
Yeah.
And everything that they taught was stuff that I had already learned just by virtue of freelancing on my own. Like, you know, I learned it in the School of Hard Knocks. So I think, like, that's another component to, like, getting artists paid is, like, teach them how to do it while they're in school.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, my school said none of that. The theater programs, you know, even the BFA programs, they don't teach you the business part.
Yeah.
You know, even down to effective headshots, resumes, what you should do training-wise afterwards. It's all, like you said, School of Hard Knocks. Well, you learn on your own afterwards.
One thing I wanted to mention about school, too, is, you know, like, a lot of jobs, like, you know, they'll say, oh, we can't pay, but it's great experience. It's like, I got my experience in college.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Where I paid money for that experience.
Or the myth of exposure.
Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah. That's the worst.
I can't pay my rent and exposure.
Yeah. Yeah. Will Wheaton just addressed that on his blog.
Yep.
It's like, no, you can't do this.
I'm really very, very happy with Will Wheaton and what he's doing with his blog and Facebook presence and Twitter presence of being a person who's in the business and talking to people in a real way of thinking about the business itself, thinking about how people treat one another, and thinking about how it disseminates those ideas to people, those things that they don't think about. And mm-hmm. There needs to be more of that.
Right.
There needs to be more people, I don't want to say shaming, but calling the business on the business of entertainment on
their
shit.
No, they should be shamed. Right? Yeah. They deserve to be shamed.
There's two.
Their behavior is shameful.
Yeah, shaming them, but also, too, calling the artists out.
Yeah.
You know, we've been talking about today, the ones who are too easy to give it away for free. And even going back to the whole 99-seat theater thing, you know, I would get in trouble because they're like, you don't know, you know, these theater companies will go away. Well, then maybe they should go away. If you can't pay your actors, learn to figure out a way to pay your actors, then don't exist. Because, you know, and then I just don't get the people who are fighting to not get paid. It's like you spend all the time training in college, all your classes that you invest in. You were talking about how you spent money on at LA Connection, things like that. You know, and that should lead to something that gets paid, either as a professional writer, as a writer slash performer, or something down the future. I mean, it just becomes a lot of there's a term that came up out of that whole thing is a lot of actors. It's like, are you a hobbyist,
or are you a professional?
Yeah, I have a friend who I was like, I couldn't figure out if he's an actor or not because he's constantly in a play, but he has a great day job like you. And he's acting all the time at night. I don't know. You're an actor, but you're just not a professional actor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, like I mentioned, getting to work with Amy Hill. I would love a career like that, where certain people know her. She's respected among the industry, but she's not famous. Mm-hmm, like you know, she's not an A-lister, but she's making a living. She's raising a daughter. And I would just love a career like that. You know,
I always liked the idea of being a character actor. I never wanted to go and be the big, huge blah de blah. I just wanted to go and work.
Yeah, character actors work forever.
And be inside of inside of little things and be one of those people that's like, I don't know your name, but I've seen you in everything.
Yes.
You know, kind of thing. Hi, everyone. It's Michael. I just wanted to jump in here with a special offer for you, the listeners of the Something Something Experience podcast. Audible.com is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I personally recommend The Smartest Book in the World by former guest and friend of the podcast, Greg Proops. It's a rollicking reference guide to the most essential areas of knowledge in Proops' universe, from the noteworthy names of the ancient world and baseball to the movies you must see and the albums you must hear. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/something2xp. Again, that's audibletrial.com/something2xp for your free audiobook. If you sign up using that URL, they'll give us a little something in return, and you'll be supporting an independent podcast just like that. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show.
Yeah, that's a great.
At this point, I'd like to just be seen in something. I did some theater, and obviously still for free because it was a charity benefit acting that I was doing, like Madrigal plays for the Santa Clarita Master Chorale benefit dinners that my ex-wife was involved in, and they did these wonderful Madrigal plays. You know, kind of like there's a theater company called Something Shakespeare Company, and they take all the plays and condense them into smaller plays, or take several of the plays and morph it into one, you know, hour long play that kind of touches on all these different parts. Reduced Shakespeare Company,
yeah,
and it's like an expurgated versions and key scenes with humor peppered into it and performed in a way that makes it all very humorous. You know,
right.
You'll see Hamlet and Macbeth and you know, Twelfth Night and blah blah, all kind of built into one play, and it makes it really funny. Or they have things that are like that, that are just Madrigal plays that are set in those kind of Shakespearean times with Shakespearean dialogue, but it's nothing to do with Shakespeare. It's just kind of that ilk.
Right.
And they were really fun, and it was a chance to do comedy, and it was a chance to do different, you know, costumes and do accents and all of those things. And I got a lot of you know, verbal praise from the people, the rich people coming to pay to support the chorale. And that was cool, but you know, that I would have liked to have kept doing that had they not shifted away from that model of fundraising. So.
Right. Yeah, and sometimes I was thinking about back when we worked and did the day job, because that was my first time working for, you know, a real, you know, office kind of job, and they said, well, this is excuse me, corporate light. And we did have flexible hours and lunch hours. I think you knew this. I would. There was actually a casting facility that was less than 10 minutes away from where we were, and I would sneak
and
out.
And you go to do auditions during the day. I remember that.
And then sometimes I have to wear a suit because I was playing corporate, and everyone thought I was interviewing for a real job, another job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would be like kind of coy and sly, like no, but they were convinced, and it's like no, but I was interviewing for.
Theater work,
and, you know, yeah, commercial work, yeah, and not what they thought,
yeah.
But
there was this tech company that I was working at in Studio City, and I kept seeing like all these hot guys like walking into the building next to us, and I was like, "What is going on?" Like blah blah blah, and then finally somebody
hot
was
guy
like,
party.
"Right, in my head, that was
and
what
just
was going
a room
on.
Full of hot guys, and all of a sudden like, "Hey, yeah, it's really awesome being hot." Isn't it?
It is funny.
But no, eventually, like, one of my coworkers was like, oh, yeah, that's, like, a modeling agency. And I'm like, I'm down.
That makes sense.
I'm going to enjoy this.
I know where I'm spending my lunches. Kitty with a little knapsack, a little sack lunch.
Pretty much.
Kind of nibbling.
Well, like, watching. No, there was one guy who came in, like, he looked like borderline goth. Like, I could tell he was goth, but he was trying to get a modeling job, so he had to look a little normal. But he had, like, you know, the big, like, 20-hole docks, and, like, he had the hair and everything, and, like, the thirst was real.
Yeah.
So real.
It's so fun to see, because we're in Hollywood, land of beautiful people, and it's funny when you're at an audition and you're the delineator. It's like, oh, okay, so now I'm the end of the nerdy doctors, and here come the hot doctors. That's happening before. Like, everyone after you is like, okay, that's all hot doctors, and I'm the, you know, this one. And or one time I was in, when you go to casting places, especially commercial ones, and they're all just by types. You can tell which ones. You don't even have to look in what studio you're in. You can go by whatever group, because it's like, I look like these people. I was in for a Microsoft spot. And we're all nerdy. We're looking, of course. And then right next door was Luxor, men and women. And you were talking about hot, just the most stunning women and men you've ever seen. And so you got nerds here and just hot people here, you know.
And they're like, they can't get next to each other because it's like two, you know.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Opposite.
Are you kidding me?
Opposite opposed magnets, you know. So they're like bumping on each other's magnetic fields, repelling one another.
Exactly, repelling. That's what it felt like. It's like they're almost
there's like this uncomfortable zone in between. You're like, totally. Between, you're like, ugh.
I'm a nerd. And if you put like hot people in front of me, like, good luck getting me away from them. Like, I will go over there. I will strike up a conversation. Like, I do not give a fuck. Yeah.
That's good. Know? That's a good one to have, but mostly it's like that. It's like, we cannot talk to you nerd people, and then the nerd people are like, we're gonna, and they're almost like a different like species because they're taller and bigger and just stunning.
Yeah,
it's funny. But yeah, it's fun to see that. I when I agented in Studio City, one of the guys who was training, I was in the adult commercial print department, and one of the agents that was cross training me in theatrical, he had a young adult and children's division, but his young adult division was just the most beautiful early 20 somethings you could ever find.
The 20 somethings that they get to play teenagers.
Yeah, the hottest young people you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And sometimes when his clients would come in, I couldn't even be with them. I couldn't look at them. You know, I was like, I can't look at them straight on because they're just too stunning. And part of me got, because I'm good, I'm a character actor, and I like character actors, so I was good. My clients that I did well with were character types. You know, I did real well with that. And one time I remember asking the owner, I go, what's up with Alex's bevy of beauties? What's that? You know, I was kind of being, you know, cynical. And yeah, and he's like, and then the owner's just like, eh. He knows what sells. That's his thing, you know. It's like, okay, whatever. I'll stick to my little character people, but, you know. Because there was one time when he moved someone from his department to mine. And he gave me the headshot. He goes, hey, Chris, this is Ben. I'm moving him from young adult to adult commercials with you. And he goes, he's one of my quirky types. And I looked at the headshot. I go, you call this quirky? This is what you consider quirky? Because the guy was stunning. It's like, I don't know how I could spin this into quirky, because he's like, okay, well, he's one of my quirky types, so it's like, but yeah, there is a lot of that, especially on Oscars Day, all the beautiful people and talented people come out. But the whole other thing, there's, I think we touched on today, I'm kind of moving into that realm where you do get to have that career where you get to pay. I still have side jobs, but ultimately I'd like to just only make my income from that. You already do, mm-hmm. Katie. So, but do you also, you know, you don't do freebies. I've done a couple freebies recently, but they were quick, you mm-hmm. know. It's like, okay, and then I can say, no, not again.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do it.
I mean, like, my rule is the only person who gets free art is my dad. Because he's my dad.
Yeah.
Nobody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you...
Yeah, I've been trying to get her to do a drawing for the podcast for a year.
Well, we're trading for that. Yeah, you're going to do a photo shoot.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
You know, like, I'll do that. Like, oh my God, one of the best barters that I ever did was with this massage therapist. And she's like, oh, I need new flyers. I need new business cards. Like, blah, blah, blah. Just basically, like, a new whole set of marketing materials. So I'm like... Okay, I can't do this for you for free, but, you know, we can trade, like, you know, my stuff costs this much, like, just give me, like, X amount of, you know, massages, and we're good. And, like, I rode that for, like, a year.
Wow.
Great.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, like, trades are one thing when it's, like, you know, a skill for a skill.
Yeah.
Like, that's still a form of payment.
It
and
is.
Even then, like, I'm so, so, so discerning with that. Like, mm-hmm. it has to be something that I would pay for already. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, getting my hair done or getting a massage or a photo shoot.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I have a friend who is much better at the business part, you know, for an artist. And he did say the same thing. Be careful about that because mm-hmm. sometimes it's uneven.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's better to get paid and use your money to buy that service than to barter completely.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, I'm so careful about it. Like with the massage therapist, like I said, it's like, well, these services cost this much. And she's like, well, I charge this much per session. So, you know, I was like, okay, I have this much credit with you. And then just let me know when it runs out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, but like the most important theme of today's podcast is, you know, artists do not give your stuff away for free.
Yeah, do not work for free.
Actors,
don't ever fucking work for free.
I know. Actors do it way too much, you know. It's too much. Yeah, it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think, it's just a whole different mentality because, mm-hmm. like I was mentioning about when you get on that track to it, you'll meet a whole different group of actors who, you know, who aren't just like, oh, you know, I do this on the side and everything and spend more time either waiting tables or doing their day job than doing the actual acting part because it's here. You did the hardest part. You're mm-hmm. in LA. You know, you can play.
You're already here.
Yeah,
right?
Everyone can play. And you just have to do some parts of the business. Of course it will get, it will evolve and grow. Like when I got my agent, I met him at an award show 2 years ago, a small award show. And I remember I had told my friend, because I'd worked for that award show for a couple years too, in between agenting myself and casting, and I learned a lot, but I was like, no, I'm not going back. I don't want to work on that award show. And I turned her down 4 times until finally she said, well, do it for me, which she already said. I said, no. She goes, and remember, you'll get a free fancy meal out of it. I'm like, okay.
free food.
Yes. But I got the agent.
I accept food as payment.
Exactly.
We'll act for burgers.
Yes, I totally did. You would have laughed because as quickly as I did it, you'll get a free meal. Oh, okay. I'll do it. I did get my agent out of that, and it wasn't an agency I'd ever heard of. It's still one that people don't hear of, but he's kicking ass for me.
Nice.
So that's kind of the agent you want, whoever works for you. And then the big agencies, because some people come in here, actors go, oh, I need to be with the ICMs and CAAs and all that. Well, when you're ready to have that kind of agency,
they're
they'll come
be
find
pursuing you.
Yeah, they'll find you.
Yeah.
They'll come a courting.
Right.
You know, I always joke that and go, if ever like one of the big ones came to get me, they could get me with just a box of See's candy. So they'll need the limos and all the other parts. Just give me a box of See's candy. I'm yours. But yeah. It's been really fun to do it because people. Also now will find me and tell me where they've seen me, like friends on Facebook and everything.
Sure.
Or, hey, we just saw you in this episode. That's really cool. You know, and, you know, I'm not that great at promoting for fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I will with bigger things, but, you know, some people will grab a screenshot or say, oh, my God, it was so cool seeing that and everything. Or people, when they start, I've seen you something like at the bank or something, and I'll smile. And
I get that. It's funny. Being in L.A., I don't know if it's the long hair or what, but I get that all the time. It's like, haven't I seen – are you in the business? Are you an actor? And it's like – I'd like to be.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, I've seen you in something, or boy, you look like this other guy. I'm like, yeah, I get that all the time.
No, you have that kind of energy.
Yeah.
And there is a market for that. Like, this might, now my agent hat is on. It's like, how could I market that? This.
Tell me. I'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is the big thing of like kind of taking that leap of faith.
Sure.
Just jumping. Sure. And I've been doing that. And then, you know, you have to tell yourself, like, when you're talking about support system, mm-hmm. you not having it, you doing your own support system, I'm kind of doing the same thing. It's like, I don't have anything to lose. I can go for it.
Right.
You mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
I don't,
yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when you're, like, approaching someone to hit on them, it's like, well, the worst thing they can say is no. It's not the end of the world.
If you're lucky, yeah.
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 Yeah. Sometimes, though, for people, that is the worst thing that could happen.
That's true.
And
that's true.
That stops them even, in, not just in that, but in everything.
Really?
I've been through that.
The fear of rejection.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just so afraid that they'll...
I guess, like,
that's not a thing.
That, like, in college.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah. Maybe. But you don't... You also have a... I think you have a better batting average than most people do.
Do I?
Yeah,
maybe.
I think so.
Well, also because you just stated you're willing to risk it. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like some people just aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in that, but in life. You know, they're, like, so afraid.
I mean, there's not a lot of... But you also have an attitude about it of, like, hey, I'm going to go talk to this guy and see if he's interested in getting coffee or whatever. And if not, oh, well, time to move on.
Exactly.
And that's the way you are about it.
Yeah.
And
that's the way I am with art jobs.
Right.
You know,
and so,
everything.
Right. And I used to really be afraid about asking people to be on the podcast, especially anybody who had any form of, you know, notoriety. And now I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just going to walk up. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to ask them if they want. If they say no, they say no. Fine. I'm going to hand them my business card. I was like, I was out to dinner with a friend, and we went to Toy on Sunset, and we went across the street to Meltdown to just look at comics and stuff, and they'd never been there, and just, you know, go and look around and see and have a good time. And it happened to be Meltdown night, and it happened to be you know, they weren't taping for the show, but they were doing their regular Wednesday Meltdown show. And we're standing over by the door, and I was like, yeah, this is the theater where they do that, and they shoot the show. They shoot Meltdown with Jonah Kamel. And up comes Ron Funches. And I'm like, hey, Ron Funches. And he's like, hey, how you doing? And then, you know, talking to Ron Funches, and I'm just like, hey, do you like podcasts? I have a podcast. He goes, I do. I said, but are you interested in doing a podcast? He goes, well, why don't you tell me more about it? Because what you've been telling me so far has not interested me at all. And so I handed him my card and told him about some of the people that we've had on. He goes, well, I like all those people, and you need to work better on getting your first hit out of the gate a little stronger than your second one, because your second one's much better. Okay, thanks, Ron Fletcher. So.
Yeah. I feel like everybody that I've brought on to the podcast, like, it wasn't a question, it was a command.
Right,
like,
right.
Hey,
come talk to us about
exactly,
this thing.
Exactly, like, hey, be on my podcast. I just voluntold you to be on my podcast. Be on my podcast.
Voluntold,
that's a good term.
Yeah.
And I love how the timing of today, you know, with the, you know, Hollywood's biggest night, with, like, the people who are, you know, just will... So rich from their art that they could never spend it all, and meets the theme of don't give away for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a small scale, the people who are like with me, who are working at the entry kind of level thing, but going for it, how well paid you will be, you know, it's relative. For my two lines on Modern Families,
yeah,
I got paid so well.
Right.
But then...
And then you're going to get residuals off of the repeats too.
Yeah.
So that's cool. When does your episode go up?
It's number 18 of this season. This is season 7. It's 18, and I think the episode. Oh, they changed the title of the episode. I'll have to look that up again. But it's number 18, and so it should be in about maybe 4 weeks or 3 weeks.
Cool.
And here's one funny thing too about learning along the way. You know, I, for the between the initial what they call the pre-read for the casting directors, and then the callback, they had like a couple dozen, you know, people look like me. Then they had four at the callback. They changed just one line. So then the lines that I did nailed, I practiced in between, you know, like after the callback, and then the, you know, then I booked it, and then the fitting for the, you know, wardrobe, they had, you know, six different outfits for me to try on. They took pictures of each one, and then it was all waiting for me in my trailer. That sounds so Hollywood, but it was anyway. They had the, you know, I'd been practicing those lines, so the night before my shoot, I had to be at Fox Studios in Century City, and you walk by CAA.
Oh, yeah.
You
do. Yeah, it's so right cool. It's fun. I used to work on Century Boulevard.
Yeah.
Century
Park, it's so East. Fun to see all the limos all backed up. It's
like I worked in the California National Bank building, that one short building in the middle of all those skyscrapers in Century City. And we had a little coffee bean and tea leaf in the basement, or in the ground floor. And I used to go down there every morning and get a coffee. And the people that would wander into there, because they would go to CAA, and then they would come over and stop in there on the coffee on their way out of Century City.
Nice.
And saw, like, Hugh Jackman and Hank Azaria and just a whole bunch of other people.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
And the story that I was just finishing was more of a, be careful, this is part of the business, too. So I get the script, night before, and right when I'm getting to bed to have to be in set, early call, my scene was the first up. I look at the script and I'm like, all my lines are changed. You better memorize these new lines. And one funny thing about it too was, I think one of the reasons I got the role was I had this funny line that I just totally did deadpan, throwaway, boom, very funny punchline thing. And I had another physical punchline in it. And the writers rewrote it, and come the day of, oh, no, Christopher, you won't be getting to the punchlines and jokes. We will be giving that to Ed O'Neill, one of the series. And it's like, that happens.
Right,
it's okay.
Right.
So it's like, oh, I see. So they cave, they rewrote the scene, but also he gets the funny. I don't get the funny. I'm just there to do my job, you know. But, a lot more fun stuff coming. And each week is a cool adventure when you get on that professional track, because you don't know what's coming around the corner.
Right.
You know, I'm prepping for a big musical theater audition for two roles. I'm finally old enough to play. And one cool thing, because I was so desperate to get in, I had my agent submit me. I submitted, and I submitted another different direct-to-email through the casting. It wasn't like I was subverting, but it was another, I'll cover my bases.
Right.
So then I got one appointment. And then I got a second appointment that said, oh, you've been invited to go directly to callbacks. I'm like, oh, cool. So, I'm prepping for that this week. And then who knows what will happen the week after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm coming off of the high of doing the sketch show with all the Asians.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think they should get maybe I can plug it here. That group is called the Golden Hour. Mm-hmm. It's every other month. So they have one in April at Iowa West on a Sunday at 10 p.m., the third Sunday. That group needs to get more recognition because it's such a cool concept. You know, where do you see, because you see little, not tokens, but token. Oh, that sketch group, that improv group has an Asian or an African American. But this one had all Asians and all the writers were Asians.
I haven't been watching SNL this season, but is there a single Asian person on that cast? Mm-mm. I mean, I know there are four black people and there's a bunch of white people, as usual. There's always a bunch of white people. But, they finally got to the point where they have, two or three black women on the cast.
Yeah.
It's like,
because Kenan Thompson basically said, I'm not going to play Oprah Winfrey anymore. I'm not going to play, Whoopi Goldberg anymore. You want black women characters represented on the show, you get black female actors to be on the show to play those characters.
Exactly.
And that was great of him to stand up and say that.
That's brilliant.
They've actually had two really great sketches as of late. I mean, obviously the Undercover Boss with Kylo Ren that everyone saw, that was hilarious.
Brilliant.
But they recently did a sketch that was like a trailer for a horror movie based on Beyonce's Formation. And it's like, when Beyonce went black.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah,
there's some clever stuff. But you're right. There aren't any Asians on SNL's cast. There was one, Bobby Lee's from that other show. What was that one that was on Fox?
Mad TV.
He was there. Mm-hmm. Then In Love and Color had Steve Park from Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
But there's none on SNL. You know, that's probably their culture.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't think they've ever had an Asian in their cast.
In England, there was a show on in the 90s, maybe early 2000s. I want to say it was the 90s, but it was called Goodness Gracious Me, and it was an all-Asian cast. And in the UK, when somebody says that they're Asian, they're usually talking subcontinent, India, Pakistan, Thailand,
Southeast Asian,
and they say that they're Asian, but it was basically people who lived and worked and were born in the UK, but of Asian extraction, Asian descent, and it was an all Asian cast. And so they touched a lot about what it's like to be Asian in the midst of, you know, white Britain, basically.
Yeah.
And it was a really good show, and it was really funny.
Yeah, they've had a stronger, the Southeast Asians have had a stronger connection with England for long, you know, hundreds of years. But yeah, the East-West Players, and also in our sketch All Asian Group, we had a girl who was Southeast Asian. And it was interesting. A couple of my friends who are Latino didn't quite get that. They go, is she mixed race? Is she, because she didn't look Asian? And I go, no, she's from, her lineage is from India.
Yeah.
And that's now referred to as Southeast Asian. So they are Asian. I go, oh. And
have they expanded the definition of Southeast Asian? Because Southeast Asia used to be just Vietnam, Laos, you know, everything.
Thailand
and all that. That's, and now that they're kind of lumping in with India and all that as well, too.
That's what they refer to.
And it's an ever-evolving thing of referential and you know.
That right. Kind of I got confused by it because it's like, it used to be called Eastern Indian, and that's easier because it's India, like the whole, you know, nation of India. And but now, it's you're right, it's the Southeast Asians, those that you've mentioned, plus India. And
Pakistan, all that.
Yeah, definitely. And our group had was represented in that. That was cool. Our cast had that, and then a lot East West Players has been doing stories that involve that. And that one of their directors, artistic directors, is Southeast Asian. The diversity is diverse even among like the Asian groups, you know. I like that. But yeah, just the idea of it was just intriguing me. I was so excited to be a part of it because I actually, the guy who, one of the co-directors of it, I met at the CBS Diversity Workshop Showcase, and I said, hey, what's that group, the Golden Hour, you did? They did one in December, they do it every other month, then I just did the one in February, and they'll do the one in April. And
that's good.
But just the concept of it.
This year and 2015, we've seen a lot more representation in media, and that's, it's very refreshing. I mean, it's still a long way to go, but it's just very refreshing to see more representation.
There was you were talking about Dr. Kenby. He had a great quote about when he goes, I wouldn't call it an explosion when there's two or three series now out of the, you know, how many?
Yeah.
It's not exactly an explosion.
It's not an Asian explosion when you got three Asian series with an all Asian or largely Asian cast out of the hundreds of shows that are largely
white dudes.
White and black, or, you know, all, there are several shows that are all black cast and things like that as well. So
yeah, and I just read last night, it was I think it was New York Times or LA Times, they did it was like a transcript of a podcast that had kind of condensed that between Trevor Noah from The Daily Show and Lupita Nyong'o, and they were talking about that kind of their perspectives on diversity, and the when they were talking, I think Trevor Noah was talking about comedy wise when all the people had were put the word out to try to get more people in, 95% of all the people who were submitting and auditioning were white, straight, you know, males. And they're like, well, what happened to, and they went out, he goes, I'm going to go on the street and ask, where were you guys? He goes, we didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, we put it out to all the agents and managers. And then the ethnic people were like, well, that's the problem. We can't get agents and managers, you know. And it's like, oh, so it was just interesting to see how, even when they reach out to it, where are they, you know?
Yeah, right. It's still like such a systemic problem, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And what was the thing with me? I was going to say something about when I was working with one of the writers on that All Asian Sketch Show, I go, this is such an amazing thing. You know, you guys are doing something so important. You know, how did this come about? How come you're doing it? And the writer goes, now we finally have the talent.
Yeah.
We can go out and find the talent.
Right.
And granted, some of the people were more legit actors that they had in it, you know, like the lady from Enterprise. But he's like, and I thought, and how did you get, like, her and Amy Hill? How did you get them involved? It's like, well, you know, they want to, you know, be part of it, you know, and moving that conversation forward. So, of course, you know, I think it was like you, though. I think for them, just like with you, the podcast, and you, just like, they just asked.
Yeah.
Or would you say something told?
Voluntold.
I actually saw Mulan for the very first time the other day, and because during the 90s, I kind of fell off the Disney train and didn't watch as much, you know, stopped watching, seeing as many of those movies when they first came out. And I was looking through the IMDb page for the movie and how many non-Asian actors there you have in a movie that takes place in China.
Yeah.
In you know, dynastic era China. And it's like, you have all these white people in it. And
yep.
I'm like, mm-hmm. What?
Yep.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, I was able to recognize some voices in it, and, you know, like George Takei's voice is very distinctive, but then you have Harvey Fierstein.
Exactly, I was thinking that. Harvey Fierstein?
What the fuck is Harvey Fierstein doing in Mulan?
Yeah, how are you?
I love Harvey Fierstein, and he was funny, and that character was funny, but...
Yeah.
I'm just glad there wasn't any big... broken English type things happening in it.
Right.
It was, but you know, you had Pat Morita and you had B.D. Wong and you had James Hong and other Asian actors that you've seen in everything, Asian character actors in it a lot, and that was good. But you know, then like, well, and then they gave Frank Welker,
uh-huh.
who, you know, Fred from Scooby-Doo, etc.
Yeah.
They gave him the two animal roles. I'm like, okay, this I'm okay with. And then you have Eddie Murphy playing a dragon. So it's like, okay, comedic effect, recognizable voice, but mm-hmm. still it's like, but again, at the time, I'm sure there's like a dearth of people that people aren't going to recognize. But then that's one of the complaints about Disney. It's like, or big budget animation is,
yeah.
Why don't you put unknowns who are more representative of those roles?
They've gotten better about it recently, like with Princess and the Frog.
Right,
Tiana was voiced by Annika Noni Rose. And then the newest Princess movie coming out features a Samoan princess. Mm-hmm. I think it's like Moana or something like that. And The Rock is playing the, like, comedic effect, like, you know...
Great. Yeah.
Animal whatever character.
Right.
That's
right.
Cool.
Yeah. Or is he, like... He's, like, a nature spirit or something? I don't know. The Rock is in it.
Well, and in Lilo and Stitch, for the most part... I mean, you had a lot of alien characters in Lilo and Stitch, but the people who were Hawaiian were played by Hawaiian mm-hmm. and or Asian actors.
Well, and even Brave, they got a Scottish actress.
Yeah, Kelly McGillis.
Kelly
McGillis. Kelly McGillis. No, Kelly.
And Craig Ferguson McPherson. Was
yes,
in it, too.
Craig Ferguson. Craig Ferguson. And, oh, God, can't think of his name. giant Scottish comedian. Not Robbie Coltrane. Billy Connolly. Billy Connolly was in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that was cool. That was cool.
Yeah.
There's a... along the lines of, like, you were talking about how... why are... There was peppering of Asian talent in Mulan, but then, you know, rounded out with a lot of people like, why is Harvey Fierstein singing this
movie? And then also the singing voices were white people singing.
Well,
singing.
They got Lea Salonga to do the female thing, and Ming-Na Wen did the title character.
Right.
But Donny Osmond sang the B.D.
Wong
role.
Sang B.D. Wong stuff. Donny Osmond. You can't get whiter than Donny Osmond.
Yeah, exactly.
Donny Osmond is so white, he's blue.
But this, considering the name of this, the studios we're recording in, there was a controversy, I think, two seasons ago, where down in San Diego, a theater was putting on, I think Duncan Sheik wrote the music to a musical, and it was set in feudal China, mm-hmm. and they had no Asians playing any of the lead roles.
Mm. Really?
And, when Asians throw fit, they throw a big fit. We're talking town hall meetings both on the East Coast and West Coast about this little regional theater going, no, you won't be putting that up. If you don't get more Asians, you won't be doing that.
Right.
But it was interesting. They even had African Americans in it. It's like,
feudal China.
Yeah, feudal China.
In feudal China, there was only Chinese people.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, it's kind of like the same thing with Firefly. Like, for, you know, a universe that's supposed to be half Chinese, there are a lot of Asians missing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I think you pointed out. I got to do a fun scene several seasons back with Nathan Fillion in Castle.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a direct reference to that in Firefly, because we were doing it, and I had to play a character that didn't speak English. So I actually blew a take. I'll tell you a second that funny story because I forgot that I didn't understand English. But he had a dialogue consultant because he had to speak Mandarin Chinese, and they did a bunch of like takes of, you know, like Detective Beckett was like, mm-hmm. how did you rattle off Chinese, you know, Mandarin at those guys, you know, me and the other guy playing the characters, and he the one they kept was the Firefly reference. Mm. There's some TV show I used to watch. But, and I asked him, I went up and go, how come you know how to speak or what happened on that show? Because I didn't know. Yeah. He goes, oh, I used to swear in Mandarin Chinese on
that
show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay. That's funny because I speak some Mandarin Chinese, but I don't know any swear words. but yeah, and the take I blew was funny because, you know, Detective Beckett would be like, do you know this guy? And hold up a picture. And I just stared and go like, I don't understand you.
I have no idea what you're saying. Yeah.
Then Nathan
Ooh,
Fillion.
It's a picture.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion would translate in Chinese. And then we'd go, oh, that person's over there. And one take, she did it. She did that thing. I forgot that I was supposed to wait for first the Mandarin Chinese dialogue consultant to say it. He would repeat it. Then we react. I just went to repeat. And you hear the director go, because Stana Katic, who plays Detective Beckett, was like, she looked at me like, what did that, you know, looking at me going, what did you just do? And I was like, oh, sorry. And you hear the director go in the microphone, he jumped. Like, yeah, I jumped. So I forgot. It's like, I was like, okay, you don't understand English. You don't understand English. You don't understand English. So wait for the Chinese, both Chinese things. You know. But it's funny. And Nathan Fillion's great. He's very, mm-hmm. he fits like the characters he plays. He's very chatty, very, same with Ed O'Neill. Mm-hmm. So nice. Mm-hmm. It's great when you get to work with these people and find how real they are and how nice they are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people are not as nice.
Yeah.
Like I worked a little bit with Matthew Perry, you know, on his shows. Everyone wants him to be like Chandler Bing, and he's sadly not. Yeah. He's not. Mm-hmm. You know. It's not that he's mean. He's just a little bit more quiet and standoffish and everything. But, yeah. But I don't want to dish about celebrities. We'll do that. You can save that for another podcast. We can bring a celebrity dish. Dishing.
Fix it in post. Yeah.
So, what do you have coming up? What are you working on? You said you talked about the play that you're auditioning for.
Yeah,
and,
auditioning for that. I just did a pilot web series that they're going to shop with. That one was fun. That one was interesting because it totally used like the internet to find me. Mm. They're having really a tough time casting this role. Mm-hmm. And one girl who I was in acting class with, talk about diversity, my main acting class is mostly Latinos.
Nice.
I found it by accident, and I was like, because I didn't have enough. It's like I want to take class, but I don't have quite enough money in the budget. And I found this class was really affordable, but it was with a Latino theater company. I'm like, I don't care, I'll just go.
Yeah.
And it was great. So this one girl wrote to me on Facebook and said, "Here, look at this role. They're trying to cast. I fit the specs." So I did a self tape audition. The director liked me and had me do another self tape audition. And then I got the role, and I got to shoot that
cool.
A couple weeks ago. So that'll be coming out. The fun thing about that was like I said, it was purely through Facebook, you know. And the producers were like, yeah, we had a tough time finding you. Mm-hmm. We wanted this.
But yeah.
But I get so many commissions from social media, like Facebook, Instagram, mm-hmm. Twitter. Like, people don't even realize, like, you can use it as a really good tool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and then, like I said, to answer your question, Modern Family should be coming out in a few weeks.
Cool.
And then Adam Ruins Everything for Adam Conover already aired, and that was fun to do.
Cool.
And, yeah, other stuff. Like I said, the other stuff that runs in syndication. Mm-hmm. I did a Criminal Minds 2 seasons ago, but people are just finding it because it's now just starting to rerun. And, like... Were you killed on an episode of Criminal Minds? Like, yes, I was killed very badly. Literally on it. So, yeah.
What's out right now that of any ilk of any form of entertainment or media that you're recommending to people that you've seen or that you've read or listened to or anything?
Yeah, I'm catching up with a lot of stuff, but I the little bits of I've seen of Aziz Ansari's Master of None.
That was a great show.
So good.
Yeah.
Great
show. People are going nuts
and
over that.
I was not a fan of his before that show.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like his stand-up very much. I found his stand-up to be very bro-y. And now that he's kind of going away from that bro-y persona and being much more about kind of hard on his sleeve about growing up as an Asian American, that to me, you know, that to me is much more in the wheelhouse. The authenticity that is there for me now, and I find I connect with his material a lot more now. So
I'm 100% with you on that. I didn't care for it before, but it ended up having a built-in diversity because with his dad and the real life friendship he had, the Alan, I think Chang, he was a writer and producer on Parks and Recreation, so that's their story.
Sure.
And then having the actor play that. Yeah.
Got the one episode dads. With the parents where it shows like, you know, the parents in like their home country and then like coming to the US and stuff. Like, that was like right in the feels.
Yeah.
People love that one. Yeah. So that one,
cool.
Just the ones that have diverse. I'm keeping an eye out there because I'm re-entering the market when diversity is working in my favor.
Cool. Well, so. They even did an episode about diversity when, you know, Aziz is like, why can't we have two Indian people in a show? You know, and like he's going on auditions and stuff, and they want him to do like the Indian accent.
Yeah,
you know,
It's awkward because you'll do it. I had an audition for Veep recently. It was a guest star, and my agent submitted me because it was supposed to be the fake president of China. And he goes, "You kind of look like the real president of China." I'm like, "What? Here's how ignorant I am." I'm like, "I don't even know what the real president of China looks like." So I Google. It's like, "Oh, I do."
Wow,
I do look like him. He's a little older, but I do. And so, and then he speaks. He ends up. The joke is he actually does speak perfect English. So I'm thinking, when I do the English, I'll add a little bit of a little layer of a not perfect, like, you know, the kind when you hear people whose English is really good, but it's not. Perfectly perfect.
A little something around the edges, and you can hear a bit of an accent.
Yeah, so that's what I did there. But yeah, playing full out, like, what I call cartoony accents. Yeah. I haven't had to do that very often, but it's just like Master of None. Like, this is really awkward.
So,
diversity is really in right now, so I'm going to keep riding that wave.
I'm hoping that it's going to be a continuing trend.
Yeah. Okay,
but it reflects more. Just like Hamilton, the musical that people are going nuts over in New York.
Yeah.
Its founding fathers all played by Latino and African-American actors, and people are going nuts over it. And it reflects, that cast reflects more like what a New York, New York is.
Well, we also have the data showing that, like, movies with more diverse casts make more money. So,
yep, Star Wars.
Right. Yeah. Well, like, anytime, you know, a studio is like, oh, we can't have, you know, like, a female action lead, or we can't have, like, a Latino lead, or a black lead, or whatever, you know. It's like, all I'm hearing is you hate money. Yeah. Like, that's what you're saying. When we have the data to show that these things make more money and you don't want to do them, you're just saying you hate money.
That is a great point.
And anybody who's not white.
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, just to finish on the Star Wars thing, J.J. Abrams made a point that all his background would be diverse even.
Yes, I noticed that. We talked about that on the podcast.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time, about the palette of character of people in that film. It's a broad stroke of what the world looks like. It's and what that universe looks
like. Right. And even
men and women and people of different colors and just all over, and it looked real. It looked it wasn't all just white people,
right?
You know.
And then the one the big battle and the one fighter for the Alliance was a female Asian. Mm-hmm. Not only a big deal that she's female, but she was Asian too. You know?
Yeah.
Did she get killed though? I don't know.
I can't remember if she gets killed. One thing that's interesting though is in A New Hope there was actually a couple female pilots whose scenes were filmed and they just got cut.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, good for J.J. Abrams who does that. He, you know, his Star Trek is so diverse.
There were female pilots, or as we call them, as Danny calls them, pilots, running across the screen, running to their ships.
Yeah, you know, when they were scrambling the pilots. And even in the control room, there were people of color, there were women, you know, there were women of color.
Cool.
What's out you're watching right now?
Oh, my God. So, if you haven't seen The Witch, go see it. It's amazing. It's a really intellectual horror film. It's feminist as fuck. And, like, no spoilers. All I'm going to say is I wish my sexual awakening was that cool. Like, holy shit. It's such a good movie.
I've been waiting to hear from my witchy friends about that movie. Because usually whenever a movie that has anything to do with witchcraft or witches comes out, it's usually like... So
yeah, well, the Satanic Temple is backing it, and like, I'm not a Satanist or, you know, a member of the Satanic Temple. Like, I'm an occultist, and I didn't feel offended by it. It's based very much on history, like, and it's billing itself as like, this is a New England folktale. This is what these people actually believe.
That's what I was. All of that, what you just said, has been absent from a lot of the copy and a lot of the promotional materials. Uh-huh. And I've been waiting for my friends who are you know, into Wicca or the occult or the broad spectrum of occultism and what they think of it before I will even bother.
Like, as an occultist, I can, like, give it my blessing or whatever.
Brooms up or whatever. Yeah.
Like, I didn't find it offensive. Like, even the title screen, it's like, The Witch, a New England folktale.
That's cool.
And it's in Old English, you know, like, dost thou want me to plow thine field and stuff like that, you know? So, yeah.
If I had a nickel. cool.
Yeah, I really, really liked it. And again, it's feminist as fuck. Like, loved it.
So, yeah, definitely have to rush out and see that now.
Yeah.
We just saw Deadpool, finally saw Deadpool last night. I was going to go last really weekend, but I had the horrible flu. But, oh my god, Deadpool is my new favorite Marvel thing. And I'm not a Marvel geek. I didn't read Marvel comics.
I'm a Marvel person, and it's my favorite Marvel thing.
I didn't even know who Deadpool was, you know, before they started talking about this movie a year ago. Never heard of Deadpool. Didn't know, didn't, whatever. It was completely off of my radar. And this movie is just fun and funny and violent and raunchy and just breaking fourth wall, which is one of my favorite things in the world. Uh-huh. Anything that breaks fourth wall, I love it.
I like, because, like, I read some of the comics. I liked how a lot of the characters were true to the comics. Like, Colossus felt like Colossus. Yes. He was big and Russian. And Deadpool felt like Deadpool.
I would have liked to have seen Colossus, not to spoil anything, I would have liked to have seen him in skin form.
Yeah. Especially, like, when he's eating breakfast. It's like, why do you need to be
vomiting?
Metal?
Yeah. But just, the movie's, it's so meta. It's so clearly Ryan Reynolds was one of the executive producers, and
he's
been trying to make that movie for 12 years. He helmed it, he pitched it, he sat at the saddle of this thing and made it be the thing that it needed to be. There needs to be so, and it's making money ass over tits. It's making so much money, and all of the other studios are now going, oh, we need to make rated R superhero movies too.
The takeaway is they need to be true to the characters.
Well, I think that Guardians of the Galaxy was a good step in the direction toward, because it was a little more irreverent, it was a little naughtier, there was some adult humor in it, there were some things that weren't just for the kiddies. It was a slight departure or slight lean in the direction toward Deadpool, because everybody loved Guardians of the Galaxy was my favorite Marvel thing, and this has supplanted it. As far as movies, Jessica Jones and Agent Carter, which is the next thing I'm going to talk about. But
oh my god, this new season has been so good. But yeah, one of the things that I loved about Deadpool is, like, you know, Deadpool's pansexual, so he has, like, boyfriends, girlfriends, everything in between. But they kept his girlfriend in the movie as dirty as he is. And I love that.
Yes, she is. She is just as filthy and just as dirty. And
happy International
Women's Day is now on my calendar forever.
That's forever. Yeah, I was like you. I didn't know. I haven't seen it yet. And one thing that I was a little afraid of is, like, I'm a wimp when it comes to, like, graphic violence. And even, but they go, well, it's done funny, but even I can't really take the Quentin Tarantino stuff.
You might want to.
It actually, it's,
your
I
eyes.
Would not call it, I would not call it Tarantino esque. There's a couple severances in the film.
Yeah. There's, like, beheadings.
But
and
there's not an excessive amount of blood.
Okay.
There's a couple kind of graphic-y, action-y type things in it. It's not, certainly not, horror, but and it's all done very, very tongue-in-cheek.
Right.
Yes, there's some extreme graphic violence in it, but it's not done to the over the top level of a Tarantino film.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I didn't even know. I thought I had to ask a friend who knew the comics more. I said, is he a villain or is he a superhero? And he goes, well, he started as a mercenary. And
yeah.
Should I explain that? And you said you grew up on Marvel, right?
Yeah.
I grew up DC. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've been a fan of Superman since I was 3 years old, 4 years old. But also too, I read it some up until like age 12, 13, and mm-hmm. I stopped reading comics, but I still like Superman in the cultural icon mm-hmm, part of it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So every Superman and Man of Steel, Superman Returns, all those I've liked just because it's got Superman in it. I'll take Superman however I can get. And I'm not such the fanboy that I will rip it apart.
Right.
Because Batman vs. Superman will not be a Marvel genre kind of film. Those fun things that we see in Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, Deadpool, that's not what you're going to get. So it'll be, you know, the fans will be confused. You know, even like people waiting at the end of, what was it, Man of Steel to see if there was like some little thing
yeah.
at the credits.
Post-credit sequence.
There's nothing in those. Yeah. So,
I will not be seeing Dawn of Justice. I will be watching, you know, a month after it comes out. I'll be waiting for all the Wonder Woman scenes.
Yeah, a super cut
of all the Wonder Woman scenes on YouTube, and that's all I'm interested in whatsoever.
Well, like, what I don't understand is why didn't they put out Wonder Woman's origin movie before they do, like, a Super Friends, like, Justice League movie? That just makes no sense to me, you know?
Yeah.
Although, this one really isn't that as much. This one was much more like Dark Knight Returns.
It looks like a hot mess.
With Wonder Woman kind of crammed in there.
Well,
instead
and Aquaman
of,
and like.
Well, yeah,
you know,
I mean, but those characters do show up in if you read Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah,
all
no,
of those characters
I know.
Come in and you know have discussions or
no,
have,
I know, and it works for a comic book because you have like a longer format to tell a story. But when you have a movie and you only have so much time and you have like. 5 main characters? That's just like, too many.
It's turning into Batman and Robin and Batgirl and.
Just like, what was it, Spider-Man 3, the Tobey Maguire one, that had too much.
Mm-hmm. I never saw it.
Yeah.
Never saw it.
And so did,
so.
Yeah. I'll still like it for the iconness of it. Like I said, I'm not so much of a fanboy that I'll rip it apart and be disappointed. I mean, the trailers of Man of Steel a few seasons back made me cry, mm-hmm. and then the movie didn't really. But I still liked it because it has mm-hmm. Superman in it. I'm just one of those kids. I'm one of the kids like, it's got Superman in it. I still like it.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, I used to be that way about Batman until they cast Ben Affleck and then I was out. Marvel is making all the right moves, and Guardians of the, or I mean, and Deadpool just firmly cements
that
Deadpool's into
place. Well, Deadpool's also Fox, they don't have the rights.
Right. Also, who's the one that owned Fantastic Four? That the awful movie.
Sony.
Sony. Yeah, doesn't Sony also own
Spider-Man?
Spider-Man?
Yeah. They have Spider-Man and Fantastic Four.
Oh, can you? I don't know why they stopped the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man franchise. Do you know why?
Because it's time to reboot it and make a new one and do what Hollywood does.
Like this is why we need to get Kim on the podcast. She's a paralegal and she works for an entertainment company.
Right.
She said like a lot of those contracts, it's like if you don't make a movie, you know,
every so many years,
then the rights revert back to Marvel. So that's why they're like, make a new Spider-Man. We're going to do new Spider-Man. All the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
And they all make money, but they're not.
But
for
like
me.
They're trying to hold on to that, you know, brand and that IP. So we're going to be getting Spider-Man movies like till the end of time.
Yeah.
I liked the Andrew Garfield as it. I didn't quite like the stories, but I liked him as it. So I just thought, why did they end that franchise of it after just two?
I just want to see like a Miles Morales Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Like we've had like white boy Spider-Man, white boy Spider-Man, white boy Spider-Man. We all know the story of Peter Parker. Like let's do Miles Morales.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I saw some pictures online of that version of Peter or Miles. So yeah, that'd
even
be
like a Spider-Gwen movie. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Mm-hmm. The other thing right now, I've just absolutely been obsessing and actually rewatching episodes already of the new X-Files, the new season of X-Files. The six episode run was absolutely stellar, absolutely knock it out of the park. It was like it was like a show coming back after a 15-year or however many year 12-year hiatus, and it just felt exactly, gave me all the feelings of the original series did, and right back into where we were, and it felt great, and I can't wait for more. Cannot wait for more. And like I said, I've watched the third episode, the Darren Morgan episode. I've watched it three times already.
Wow.
It's so good.
I was a casual viewer of it, but I found it a friend of mine who was a crazy nerd fan, and you would have never guessed.
Yeah.
She's this elegant, blonde, tall, just very fine girl, and she's like, I was the biggest X-Files geek you ever met. And she was saying the same thing you did about the new series. But, I like I said, I would probably enjoy it because I'm a casual viewer, but... it was funny to find out one of your friends something, you know, when you find out something you didn't know.
Yeah.
So it's like, I would have never guessed that you. No, she goes, I was obsessed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Same here.
And she's not likely. She's not of that, demographic.
Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's great right now is season 2 of Agent Carter.
Yes.
I missed the start of it, but we went and binged watched the first, six episodes. And it's just as good as the first season, and
I love
there's
the
even
way.
More representation, more people of color, more women showing up, and now they're in Los Angeles, and it's just it's well written, and it's still that thing of she's always the smartest person in the room, and she's the one that has always. And they even talk about those things. They talk about the time period that they're in. They talk about diversity or lack of diversity. Mm-hmm. They talk and they touch on those little things in a way that doesn't completely take you out of it to where it's like, oh, I'm being talked to about diversity. It's like, no, this is conversations that you know that were happening at that
time
period.
And it makes
period.
Sense, like, yeah, in context. Yes, but, yeah, I love the science angle, and I love that the two main scientists are the movie star, like, woman, mm-hmm, you know, very, mm-hmm. like, Hedy Lamarr mm-hmm, kind of mm-hmm, archetype, mm-hmm, and the black physicist. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been really good. And, mm-hmm. and you know... the acting and the people that they have on that show and the little touches to other things in the universe and stuff. Yeah. And it's Marvel's making all the right moves. It's just outstanding.
Yeah, they can't do any.
I can't wait for Daredevil season 2.
Yeah, that's going to be good too.
I kind of binge watched part of the first season, you know, and my thing with the violence, oh my gosh, that door thing with the, mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, I can't, even though we didn't see anything, it's like, I can't unfeel that, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this is violent, but it was, mm-hmm. it was still very entertaining. Yeah. So.
Thanks for your time and talking about everything. This has been awesome.
Thank you.
Go ahead and plug your stuff. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I do need to update my website. Isn't that sad? Because that's where I met you. I'm an actor who can code websites and do minor graphic stuff. And but you know, you can find me on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm at Christopher Chen on Twitter. I'm facebook.com/Christopher Chen or Christopher Chen Actor. That's the actor page.
Cool. Do you have an IMDb?
I do.
Cool. Yeah. We'll put that up too.
Yeah, and then yeah, it's a good reminder. I've got to update my website because, like, it's like my one of my acting teachers or my voiceover teachers found my old website that was my current one, and she's like, "You need to update that." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "I know how to code websites and from scratch." And she's like, "Well, just like the shoemaker's kids being barefoot,
right?
It's like, okay, Mr. Website Coder, you need to code your own website." So, yeah, but that's ChristopherChen.com. I'll put stuff up there and. It's been fun. Thanks for letting me represent the little, you know, the working actor people.
Of course.
Working actors.
Yes, yes.
But they're actually doing
it. This podcast did kind of become business talk.
It happens.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. I'm not saying that as a bad thing.
It all just kind of goes wherever it goes.
But it's good lessons. Like, I love your stance.
Thank you.
I'm going to adopt that because some more of my artist friends need that. And I really appreciate that you are just so matter of fact about that.
Yeah.
It's very admirable.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, is it my turn to plug my stuff?
Mm-hmm. Plug your
shit. So you can find my graphic design work at kittybrowndesigns.com. I'm on Facebook as Kitty Brown. I'm on Twitter as Kitty Brown. And I'm on Instagram as Black Magic Woman, and it's magic with a K at the end. So, yeah, that's where you can find me.
Cool. I'm at St. Michael on Twitter. That's SAYNTMYKL_St. Michael on Instagram. You can find us online at something2xp.net. Please subscribe and review us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook and Google Plus and Stitcher. Check us out at our blog and listen to past episodes on somethingtoxp.net. Email us at somethingtoxp@gmail.com. And remember, please be kind.
You've just listened to the Something Something Experience podcast with your hosts, Michael John Simpson and Kitty Brown. Something 2XP was conceived and produced by Michael John Simpson. Intro music, Ways to Change Faces, and outro music, Scorpio 37, was written, produced, and provided by the talented Sebastian Cesari. Please visit our website at something2xp.net. You can find us online everywhere as Something2XP. Please subscribe and review us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Please follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook and Google+. Please help support our podcast and get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/something2xp. Email us at something2xp@gmail.com. We invite your feedback. Please be kind.